Football NFL Podcast. I'm your host, Andrea Hengst, AFC North lead writer at BleacherReport.com and pro football focused fantasy football contributor. I'm joined this Thursday, like every week, by my co-host, Brian.
Welcome back, Andrea.
Welcome back. Not counting the Pro Bowl, we have one NFL game left, the Super Bowl.
Well, the Pro Bowl isn't really an NFL game.
No, it's not much of anything.
It's just, you know.
Well, we only have the Super Bowl remaining. We're about 10 days out from the Seattle Seahawks returning to the Super Bowl to face the New England Patriots. Seattle Seahawks came back in stunning fashion over the Green Bay Packers to win the NFC Championship game, while the Indianapolis Colts were bested by the Patriots 45-7.
Yeah, I kept thinking, you know, as I'm sure most people were watching the game, it's the way the Packers owned the first half, but still, like, weren't, you know, that far out in front.
And sure, there was, I mean,
they were within reach.
There were a lot of turnovers and things, but yet they were only up 16-0, which is pretty close considering
circumstances. And I kept thinking that, and then. But then it was like, but it's getting later and later in this game. So if they're gonna try and do this comeback, it's gonna have to happen quickly here, you know. And certainly that's what we saw. You know, it was
amazing.
That was the thing, is that it was such a dramatic turnaround, and that it did happen so late and so quickly. You know, it was what five minutes left in the game or whatever. They're still down two scores, you know, somehow or what it was. Even less than 5 minutes, 2 minutes left, right?
5 minutes.
Well, regardless, it was quite a comeback. One of the better ones we've seen in a while. I mean, it seems like there's, you know, maybe like a good game like this every postseason.
Of course, I mean, the conference championship games at least produce one, if not both, of the two most thrilling.
Typically,
matchups,
yeah.
Of the,
I mean,
year.
We didn't get that this week or this year.
No,
but
we did get it. We did get it. We got the AFC Championship game. We just got a different one. We got the Patriots and the Ravens
the week before. Yeah, the divisional round. Right.
But of course, we can't get to the Super Bowl without some sort of controversy. And no, it is not Marshawn Lynch refusing to speak to the media. No, it's not. It is instead the Tom Brady and New England Patriots football deflation scandal.
That's what you're calling it.
It did not take place in a hotel, so it does not deserve to be called a gate. I'm sorry, but there is no Ball Gate Hotel. And if there were, I don't know if you'd want to go there. Apparently, 2 pounds per square inch, the footballs, the 11 of 12, the New England Patriots footballs were underinflated. Bill Belichick doesn't know anything about that. Tom Brady doesn't know anything about that. Everybody's kind of saying a quarterback probably knows everything about that, but he doesn't have to say anything, and the league's not investigating and probably won't do an investigation until after the Super Bowl, so no one's going to be punished. Bill Belichick is not going to be suspended for the Super Bowl. He's not going to miss a whole year. This is not even the same thing as the illegal spying, the video recording that they did, 10 years ago or whatever,
right.
7 years ago.
Spygate.
It's not there's no Spygate Hotel either. So all I'm going to say is this. Okay, it's against the rules. If we can find out who did it, I guess someone gets punished. But it had nothing to do with the Patriots beating the Colts 45-7. And, in fact, it's potentially something the Patriots have been doing all season, if not longer. The Baltimore Ravens were kind of complaining about it earlier in the year. They kind of tipped off the Colts, apparently. I don't know. All I know is this. There was a 30-minute press conference today with Tom Brady, and he denied everything, and it was pretty ridiculous. And as a person who covers football for a living, I have heard the word balls more times in the last, 3 days than I've heard in the entire season.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
And that's all I'm going to say about the ball deflation scandal.
Yeah.
I don't like cheating. I'm not excusing cheating. What I am saying is, why is this kind of cheating even, such a big deal? Because it doesn't accomplish anything. It makes the ball easier for a quarterback to grip. Okay. And,
exactly. And that's the other thing is, there's really, it's kind of impossible to track this down. I mean, I don't understand where this investigation, or if there's going to be an investigation, quote unquote, you know, or if, you know, how big a deal everybody, like the NFL, is going to make this. Or whatever. Apparently, the NFL has enough evidence that they're sold that it happened, and just to say that at least, but like the best question is and, because really what you know the worst case scenario, you know, they can say, well, it was a, you know, an offensive assistant hasn't been pumping them up right or something like that, and like Brady just,
well, it happened sometime after the footballs were with the officials and they said, okay, these have the right pounds per square inch of pressure. It happened sometime after that. That's all I know. How many minutes have we spent on this?
Yeah, exactly.
No, I mean, how many minutes on the show have we spent on
this? Oh, yeah. It's easily 3-4 minutes here.
Okay, that's it. I promise no more than 5. I don't want to talk about this. Let's instead talk about how the coaching carousel keeps spinning in the National Football League. As expected, former Baltimore Ravens offensive coordinator Gary Kubiak has taken the head coaching vacancy in Denver for the Broncos, bringing with him, of course, his quarterback's coach as well. Kubiak, the day before John Fox was ousted in Denver, did release a statement saying that he was not interested in any head coaching jobs, though that's considered to be targeted directly towards the New York Jets and the Buffalo Bills, both of whom wanted to interview him for their respective vacancies. Of course, this Denver job, too good to pass up for Gary Kubiak, and the Ravens wasted no time bringing in former Chicago Bears head coach Mark Trestman as offensive coordinator and bringing Marty Morningweg in as their new quarterbacks coach. I'm all for this move. I understand, you know, Gary Kubiak wants to get back in that head coaching job. This is a good opportunity for him. This is where he played. This is where he's been a coach. It's likely a bucket list item for him, probably, to coach the Denver Broncos. And I like the Trestman hire in Baltimore. I think that it's kind of a lateral move. Everybody can kind of say, oh, yeah, but the Bears were the most heavy passing offense in the National Football League in 2014. But look at why. Their offensive line didn't do a really good job, pass blocking. Even then, though, Matt Forte did have more carries than Justin Forsett had for the Ravens. He also had more passing targets than Justin Forsett. Both of them run West Coast-style offenses. Joe Flacco is, I think, a better quarterback to work with at this point than Jay Cutler. So I feel like this is going to be a pretty seamless transition for the Ravens. I mean, there's going to be a few hiccups, and they have to figure out what to do with Torrey Smith and whether or not Forsett will come back or if he ends up in Denver with Kubiak. And there are other things to consider here. But in terms of coordinator to coordinator, I think it's going to be pretty smooth to go from Gary Kubiak to Mark Trestman.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think Trestman's a dumb guy. I think he's
very football
right,
intelligent.
And I think that he'll understand he doesn't need to reinvent the wheel there, that they had things working pretty well.
Sure.
And I think it's more of him taking over and maybe tweaking some things and adding some of his spice probably to, like, the passing game or whatnot. But they'll probably try and continue with, with Kubiak's, the success he had in getting the offensive line and the running game going. And they'll probably try and pick up where he left off. And Kubiak to the Broncos, I think I don't think you certainly weren't expecting it. I didn't expect it based on just things that he was saying like 2-3 weeks ago or whatever. But I think it was also those were in response to other coaching jobs.
To the Bills and Jets jobs.
Right. And those are the different jobs, different organizations, different front offices, things like that. And I think he probably, made his bones, if you will, in Denver, and for him to go back as the head coach is probably something that appealed to him from that perspective. So certainly understandable, and I think that's about as good a job as they could have done, I think, the Broncos. And what seemed like a very quizzical idea here to get rid of John Fox and most of the rest of the staff out there in Denver, to bring Kubiak in and we'll have to see where everything goes, I mean, and how it affects, Peyton Manning and that whole
thing.
Well,
we don't even know if Peyton Manning is going to come back yet. I mean, he hasn't made that decision one way or the other. And obviously, Gary Kubiak, he's here wanting to have a job longer in Denver than Peyton Manning.
Sure.
He wants to outlive Peyton Manning's tenure there. So I think that's a good hire because you can get more out of Peyton Manning if you ask him to do a little bit less. Obviously, his arm strength isn't where it used to be. His deep ball accuracy isn't where it used to be. If you have a really good run game, which is something that Gary Kubiak can put together with ease, then you're relying less on the passing offense, and you're asking Peyton Manning to do less. Now, does Peyton Manning want to do less? I don't know. And that's why, you know, we're still up in the air here as to what the quarterback situation in Denver is going to be. But, you know, Kubiak took this job knowing that at some point, whether it be this year, next year, the year after that, there was going to be some sort of, you know, definitive answer of Peyton Manning is done.
Right.
So I think for now, I think that Kubiak's offense, you know, it'll be a strength for Peyton Manning. It'll be a strength if they have to move on to another quarterback. Because, again, you've got that run game that everything is built upon. Mm-hmm. So as long as they can have that run game going, C.J. Anderson, I would imagine, would be the centerpiece of that, unless Kubiak really wants Justin Forsett, who's a free agent, to come on in. You know, have that run game be a centerpiece, as long as they got the offensive line that can open up holes for that run game. You know, Kubiak should be just fine regardless of quarterback, in my opinion.
Yeah, and I think that's the best thing about the hire for the Broncos is that a lot of guys, had they brought him in just to, I don't want to say appease Peyton, but you know, try to talk him into coming back or anything like that, or just try to, you know, stem the tide, if you will. It's hard to say where things would happen after he was done. Is
right.
Everything going to implode? Are they going to have to go in a new direction?
Right. Kubiak is a Broncos hire. He's not a Peyton Manning
exactly.
hire.
Exactly. Right. Because the Broncos are more than Peyton Manning because, hell, he was only there. He only came there a couple years ago. So, you know, they're the organization, and that's what they need to make the head coaching hire as best for the organization. And if things were that tenuous between Elway and John Fox or whatever the situation was that they had to make a change, this is a good hire, I think, for the long term for the Broncos. And, you know, whatever happens with Peyton happens with Peyton. So we'll just have to see. That'll be interesting to watch, though.
The Cleveland Browns, meanwhile, have filled their offensive coordinator vacancy, bringing in former Oakland Raiders quarterbacks coach John DeFilippo to take on that spot left vacant by the departure of Kyle Shanahan after 1 year. That was made official today in a press conference in which DeFilippo basically echoed the same sentiments that we've been hearing for the past year out of Mike Pettine, that it's not going to be a specific type of offense. It is the Cleveland Browns offense. And also saying, just as Mike Pettine did to close out the season, that they're not sure yet that the quarterback of the future or the quarterback of 2015 is currently in the building. At the same time, there are some reports that talks are heating up between the Browns and impending free agent quarterback Brian Hoyer to bring him back to Cleveland, which would be a smart move considering not only do they have a new offensive coordinator, they also are trolling Mobile, Alabama right now trying to find themselves a new quarterbacks coach and a new wide receivers coach. So having some veteran continuity from 1 year to the next, especially with a coaching staff that feels very uncertain about Johnny Manziel's prospects, not just in 2015, but in the NFL as a whole, you know, I don't feel like blowing up the quarterback room entirely would be a smart move here. So bringing back Hoyer, I think, would help that quarterback situation. I would assume that if he comes back, he'd fully be in the mix yet again to compete for that starting job. But the DeFilippo hire, you know, it's interesting to me. You know, his only experience calling plays as an offensive coordinator was a two-year stint with San Diego State, or San Jose State. He had two different stints with the Raiders as quarterbacks coach, and then he was an assistant quarterbacks coach for the New York Jets with Mark Sanchez, which is where he and Mike Pettine first crossed paths. He has kind of a West Coast background, similar to what they were coming off of with Kyle Shanahan, but you know, I like the hire just because a lot of people around the NFL say, you know, this is kind of like the next Adam Gase. He's a wealth of football knowledge that just hasn't been tapped until now. But when you're in such a wide-open situation at quarterback, and we don't even know if Josh Gordon's going to be back next year either, I have no idea how well DeFilippo is going to do at this job until you got these other assistant coaches, you got the quarterback position and the wide receiver thing ironed out.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. It's always tough to say how an unproven, you know, coordinator that gets elevated to that position is going to do, especially a young guy like him. But hey, you know, if he's got a reputation for being a bright young mind, you know, it's some guys get a shot and they fail spectacularly, and other guys get a shot and they do really well. And
sure.
And then also there's the in-between. And so, you know, we'll have to see where that goes. It happens all the time, though. Every year there's guys that get elevated into a position that they haven't really – had too much experience with before, and you know, like I said, sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. So as far as the quarterbacks there, I think talking about bringing Hoyer back, is it for a long term or just like a 1 year deal?
I don't know.
Okay, that
nothing
would,
like that. We're not at we're that not point that far. Yet.
Okay, so that's what I'm saying. Like
they're
I think
just
that's
opening the door.
That's
to
really
talks.
That's really where it'll be get interesting, because I think it makes sense to bring him back for a year at least. You know, as far as a long term, I don't know, but like. You know, you're right. He's the veteran. He was the, we'll say the steady hand at the quarterback position. If you're gonna call
until
any
Alex
of them
Mack
that,
broke his leg.
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah, true. And they had success with him earlier in the year. Manziel hasn't proven anything that as far as
he hasn't even proven
being
that
the
he
guy,
can prepare for a game.
That's what I'm saying. Like he is such a non-starter at this point because he's had limited game experience with which he hasn't had a lot of success, and really all he's been has been an off-the-field story.
Yes, a negative headline,
so
negative attention.
There's no reason to think that he's the guy you should bank your franchise on right
no.
now. Bringing Hoyer back makes sense just because, like you said, there's veteran continuity there. He is a guy who has shown a lot of work ethic and smarts and love for the Browns in Cleveland. So I think that those are all good things that should work to his favor. And realistically, what's the free agent market look like right now for quarterbacks?
Not very good. It's not very good. And that's going to be the real interesting situation with Brian Hoyer here, because with this quarterback situation the free agent market's very thin. The quarterback, the rookie market is extraordinarily thin. I couldn't look at very many of those guys. Maybe not even, you know, Jameis Winston, Marcus Mariota to be week one rookie starters. So you look at that situation, how many teams are in the need of a quarterback, and Brian Hoyer could end up being a pretty hot commodity mm-hmm. on the free agent market. So in order for him to get a deal done to return to Cleveland, it's going to have to be in the acceptable starting quarterback range. Now, he's no longer in that 14 to 16 or even $18 million a year market because of the way that his season ended. But if he can get 12 elsewhere and a guaranteed starting job, or 10 a year elsewhere and a guaranteed starting job, rather than 8 or 9 from Cleveland and the opportunity to compete.
This iffy situation, right.
It's an iffy situation. So it's finding out what the right price for a guy who could be a starter but could be a backup in 2015 would be. So that's and the market is going to do so much to dictate what Hoyer's value is. So, you know, they're smart to kind of get back on this train and get these negotiations going well before free agency starts. But I'm sure Hoyer is well aware and his agent is well aware of how many teams need a quarterback, how many opportunities Brian Hoyer might have elsewhere to start and be guaranteed that job. Whereas in Cleveland, he might be competing with six guys. I mean, they said we're leaving no stone unturned, and I happen to believe that. I mean, they've got Johnny Manziel. They've got Connor Shaw. I wouldn't be surprised if they bring in, let's say, Mark Sanchez, who has experience with DeFilippo and is a free agent. Maybe Sam Bradford could be in play here for the Cleveland Browns.
Sure.
Another rookie could be in play with the draft. I mean, they could have five or six quarterbacks so they can try to whittle it down to one. So would Hoyer be open to being in that situation? Does he think he could win out in that situation? So there's a lot to consider here with that quarterback position in Cleveland. But until we at least have a quarterback, or at least a quarterback's coach, and then we can kind of see maybe what kind of direction they're interested in,
mm-hmm.
you know, is Manziel a viable option? Until we kind of get these things ironed out, it's to be determined.
So it's all
happen.
A work in progress, exactly.
Another work in progress, the Chicago Bears. They brought in John Fox pretty quickly after he was dismissed by the Denver Broncos. With the new GM there, he wanted to bring in a head coach that had already had NFL head coaching experience. Meanwhile, his former offensive coordinator, Adam Gase, is bouncing around interviewing places and not having it go so well, whether it's personality fit, scheme fit, or both. Adam Gase went from hot commodity to not commodity, and so he has rejoined John Fox in Chicago as the offensive coordinator for the Bears. He will be the man responsible, ostensibly, unless they move on or trade him for Jay Cutler in that offense. But what I really like is Vic Fangio being brought in as defensive coordinator, formerly of the 49ers.
I, you got to look at this as probably the Bears probably did the best job as far as changing their coaching staff in the carousel that's been going on this year,
right?
In this off season, I think you know obviously they replaced their GM too. They got a real young guy. He's younger than me, which is really hard for me to figure out still. and
he's still a little bit older than me, though.
Yeah, yeah. Well, at least there's that. And but he's a young guy. But he seems you know pretty bright. And I've never been much of a fan of John Fox personally, but I certainly respect him as a head coach. He's had plenty of success in the league. But those coordinators picking up Fangio and Gase, I think. The three of those together are probably the strongest, you know, new regime of anything we've seen so far.
Right.
At least as far as the complete ones. You know, I mean, Atlanta's still sitting out there with rumors, but nothing official yet. So.
Right. They've got Kyle Shanahan as their offensive coordinator, and they're apparently waiting on Dan Quinn.
And even if those rumors come true, I still don't know how. I don't know if I would say that's a better new coaching regime than what they have in Chicago right now. So
I'm with you with that just because Atlanta retained their general manager, Thomas Dimitroff, and Dimitroff has been kind of the source of a lot of the problems in terms of drafting and depth that the Falcons have experienced over the past year or two. So, I mean, you can have all the greatest quarterbacks or coaches, you can have all the greatest coaches and coordinators that you can, but if you're drafting poorly and you don't have the depth, then these coaches and coordinators have nothing to work
well,
with.
Well, and that and the idea that, you know, if they do get Quinn as it is rumored, you know, he's a first-year head coach, and you just never know how guys are going to work in that. You know, they could be the best defensive coordinator. They're like that for 10 years, and they get a head coach job, and they're just not good at it. They're better at being a defensive coordinator. They're different jobs, and people forget that. It's just like, oh, if you're a good,
vastly different,
if
jobs.
You're a really good coordinator, you should absolutely be a good head coach. Then it's like that's not exactly
that's
how it
not
works.
Really, how it works.
Sometimes there's guys that aren't good at the coordinator level that are actually better at being a head coach. You know,
right? And, because there's a different level of management of players. There's a different level of interaction. There's a different level of job duties, responsibilities.
And your in-game decision, your in-game duties are different.
Your in-game duties are different. A lot of things are different. And you have to have the personality to be a head coach. I mean, we saw it with Mark Trestman.
Exactly.
I would assume that Mark Trestman is going to go into Baltimore and be a very successful offensive
coordinator. I would expect that as well.
I completely expect that. You know, I expect Gary Kubiak to take a couple of steps back from how well he was as the Ravens offensive coordinator, because there's just all this other stuff that goes along with being a head coach. And
well, he's been a head coach before in Houston. So,
but it's also negatively affected his health. So we'll see if he dials it back a little bit.
That's really what I'm most in Denver. I'm not going to say interested in, but a little concerned for him just because he has that history of the medical condition there.
The transient ischemic attack, otherwise known as a mini stroke.
There you go. And so, you know, I don't know. Hopefully he's at a place where, you know, he can deal with the pressures of being in that position better. And, he understands how to deal with his own health better. And that's not something that we see an issue going forward.
Oh, by the way, Tony Sperano has a job.
Oh, did he?
He did not have to travel far for his new job. He is now the 49ers tight ends coach.
All right, well, that's good.
So he's going with the tight ends coach, sort of like how Doug Marrone, who's getting $4 million from the Buffalo Bills, no matter what he chooses to do this year, is the O-line coach for the Jacksonville Jaguars, because who cares? He's getting $4 million from the Bills no matter what he does.
And he's going to coach up the O-line there for a year and probably be back in the mix next year when it's the next coaching carousel.
Especially if he does a good job, because as we all know, Jacksonville, what they gave up 70 sacks. That line gave up 70 sacks this year.
They need help on the O-line.
Bortles. So if he can turn that offensive
that's
line
a project
around
for him, yeah.
and get Bortles maybe sacked maybe 19 or 20 times next year, then that'll be a pretty glowing track record. That'll be some significant success there for him, so he could get back in that head coaching mix. There's been a lot of negative talk about him, but who knows?
Just as long as, you know, they don't even have to be world beaters or anything. They can just be slightly better.
He's going
to
be better.
He's not. I don't think it even matters. Like, I don't think people are really going to pay attention to what goes on with him this next year. It's going to be like, oh yeah, Doug Marrone. He was
Doug Marrone.
He didn't get fired. He just walked away from that job, and he was a sought after coaching candidate thereafter for a little bit, and just didn't stick anywhere and or didn't want to do any of those jobs. I don't know. And, you know, that's I really think that's what it was. He's just kind of packing up and saying, let's see what happens next year. I'm getting paid anyway. I'm going to be in a different situation where there's less pressure, and we'll just re-rack it next year and see where he might be able to go then.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that could definitely be possible. But obviously, he still wants to be on a football field because he had just sat at home and got $4 million and now had to worry about
it. Well, now
he
gets two checks, so.
That's true. Two checks are better than one.
So, is that about it for the coaches?
That's about it for the latest on the coaching moves around the NFL. Slowly but surely, we're getting all of these vacancies filled. Again, still waiting on Dan Quinn, see if he ends up being the coach for the Atlanta Falcons. It seems to be a foregone conclusion that it was a kind of a package deal involving him and Kyle Shanahan, and just kind of a formality. Got to wait till after the Super Bowl to make this a reality. So we're just kind of waiting on that. Mm-hmm. And, of course, the Browns filling out their wide receiver and quarterback coaching positions.
Yeah, and there's a couple other smaller
position coaching vacancies.
Yeah, and some of the other staffs throughout the league.
Yep, and that'll probably start making more sense as we, especially people can start confabbing around the Super Bowl and all that. So
right.
Also, not a lot of NFL news this week so far, aside from, of course, the deflated football thing, of which we will never speak again, and of course, three London games. Scheduled for the 2015 NFL season, all of which will be kicking off at 9:30 p.m. Eastern. That's 9:30 a.m. Eastern, a.k.a. 8:30 a.m. here in Chicago. That will make it three quadruple headers coming up with a very early, an early, a late, and a night game. Three times in 2013. Literally 17 hours, 15 hours.
It's you know,
consecutive
it's,
footballs.
The more I think about it, I'm bittersweet on this because it's I liked it. I enjoyed when the Lions played the Falcons this year. It was early, and I got up, and you know, I had some breakfast and a Guinness, and I'm watching the football, and you know, then you get into the game, the afternoon games. You don't want to go anywhere. You know what I mean? I by the end of the day, I was just like. My butt was sore, basically, from sitting there for so long, and so I think I like the idea. It's like ooh, it's you know, it's early in the morning. There's nothing else going on except pregame.
It's a good time,
and here's
day
a game to watch. You know,
fans in London to go to the game.
Yeah,
and
it's certainly more convenient
games
for the London fans. Yeah, exactly. So I think it's cool from that perspective. It's just like, man, now there's going to be three times this year where if you want to watch it all. You're gonna have to be up early, and you're
up
gonna
late.
Be yep, and you're gonna be sitting, you're gonna be stationary for a good period of the day. So,
well, the other thing too is, you know, I'm not a morning person, and I know that like not all three of these games are gonna be the most compelling matchups, but I would assume that at least two, if not all three, end up being really good games. So it's going to be just a long. I don't like waking up early, like 8:30 a.m.
Well, you can always set your alarm and just check in on the games.
8:30 a.m. on a Sunday.
See if it's
early
worth getting up and
me,
watching the rest of it.
Especially when I'm covering the NFL for a living and I'm sitting in front of the games from noon until midnight and having to write and take notes and then put another game at 8:30 a.m. on top of that is just going to knock me completely out. So I don't know how much of these 8:30 a.m. games I'm going to end up catching. But sure, I mean, more power to the NFL, you know, maybe get some more butts and seats and eyes on the games in jolly old England itself.
Yeah, I don't know where that whole thing's going, but I guess something seems to be going well because they keep doing it and they keep doing it more. So,
well, they want to have a team out there eventually, and the only way to get a team out there is to have more and more games and get people more and more interested.
It just,
so, you know, you
it still seems
you
odd to me. It still seems odd to me. But
I don't like the idea of a team in London, but we all know that nobody but Roger Goodell and the people who make all the money in the National Football League. They're the only ones super into it. So.
And they're the only ones whose opinion matters.
Yeah,
so.
They're the only ones whose opinion matters, so who cares? So that's basically going to do it for this week's F-Ball NFL podcast.
Yeah, there's the Senior Bowl this weekend. I mean, I don't know. I haven't followed much. It's been like Twitter numbers of people's hand sizes.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
and
there's
things
hand
like
sizes. I'm going to watch the game, but I don't know anything about this, so we're not going to discuss that.
Yeah, no, I'm just mentioning it. You know, I think I'm going to probably try and catch like one of the recap shows or something like that, get caught up a little bit, and I'll probably watch the Senior Bowl. You know, I like to watch those sorts
of
things.
I'll watch the Senior Bowl.
We've got that going on at least this weekend.
There's also the Pro Bowl on Sunday. I will not be watching the Pro Bowl because I'm going to be watching the Royal Rumble.
That's right.
My big Royal Rumble prediction, by the way, Roman Reigns is going to win the Rumble because Roman Reigns looks strong. That's the whole point, is to make him look strong, and he'll be facing Brock Lesnar for the title at WrestleMania. That's my prediction.
All right. That's probably right.
Yeah, that's probably correct. But those of you who aren't watching the Royal Rumble or have no interest in it or for some reason are really into the Pro Bowl, enjoy the game. It is our last chance this year to see Andrew Luck and J.J. Watt and Antonio Brown and seventh alternate quarterback and final draft pick of the night, Andy Dalton.
Pro Bowl is good for, like, alternate TV. Like, when you got second TV in the living room and you want to throw the Pro Bowl on, it's like, right. Oh, because then you can, like, you know, you're just watching something else, but then you, like, look over when there's, like, some big play happens that's, like, noteworthy. But, yeah, the rest of the schma is, like, you can have it.
Yeah. So next week we'll come back here at the F-Ball NFL Podcast and preview the Super Bowl matchup between the Seattle Seahawks and the New England Patriots, and also break down any and all other news that comes down next week, and I'm sure that'll happen. So until then, it's time to read some facts.
Ooh, that's right.
And send you off your merry way with this nice, quick, simple, non-complicated episode here of the F-Ball NFL Podcast this week. Here are football facts from the Little Giant Book of Football Facts. Again, if any of these prove to be false, just let me know. Drop us a line on Twitter, and we'll reward you handsomely.
Yes.
Here are the facts. A flare pass is a short pass to a player swinging wide or flaring out of the backfield. A flare pass is usually thrown to a running back. Baltimore Colts wide receiver Raymond Berry snared 631 passes for 9,275 yards during his NFL career.
You're reading these in order, right?
Oh, I'm reading these in order.
Yeah, I just wanted to make sure that
219.
I want to make sure we didn't flip any pages there. We went straight from a definition to just some stat thing.
Oh, it's going
to
get weirder. Ray Perkins, who was an NFL player and coach, was an All-American wide receiver at the University of Alabama. While at Alabama, Perkins caught passes thrown by future NFL star quarterbacks Joe Namath, New York Jets, and Ken Stabler, Oakland Raiders.
All right.
Tom Fears of the of the Los Angeles Rams caught 18 passes in one game in a contest against the Green Bay Packers in 1950.
Okay, that seems weird.
Finally, Oakland Raiders wide receiver Fred Biletnikoff led all NFL receivers with 61 catches in 1971.
Yeah, I just you get these.
Antonio Brown had like twice as many.
So and so did this. So and so did that.
Here's
a flare pass. Here's a flare pass. That's what that is. And yeah. So anyway,
it's an entertaining book.
It is. It's something else. It's slightly educational, I'd say.
Somewhat. And with that wraps up this week's episode of the F-Ball NFL Podcast. I'm your host, Andrea Hengst, AFC North lead writer at BleacherReport.com. You can Google me, find my articles that way, search me over at TheBleacherReport.com. You can also find me on the TeamStream app by Bleacher Report. You can add me as one of your favorite writers and follow all of my articles there. Or you can like my writer page on Facebook. That's facebook.com/ahankstnfl. I am also a fantasy football contributor for Pro Football Focus. That's profootballfocus.com. Pro Football Focus Fantasy just took home the Fantasy Sports Writer Association's best single sport fantasy football site.
Good stuff.
In their yearly awards last week. And I had one tiny little hand in us winning that award, I'd like to think. And then I can also be found on Twitter at @FBall_Andrea. That's @FBALL_Andrea.
And I'm Brian, of course. I can be found on Twitter at @BFAT65. That's @BFAT65.
Thank you, everyone, for joining us here this week on this brief but informative edition of the F-Ball NFL Podcast. Like we said, we'll be back next week to preview the Super Bowl, a.k.a. the final NFL game of the season. I'll try not to cry. So until then, enjoy your weekend. Enjoy the Rumble, the Pro Bowl, the Senior Bowl, or having a life away from sports and football for once. And we'll be back next week.
Later.
Peace.